Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 1:41 p.m. that is Pacific Standard Time. Today is January 23rd, and I thought that I would start out today in Asia, where the Hang Seng Composite Financials Index is breaking out to new recovery highs. It hasn't approximated this level since 2007, when it had accelerated to get up here. And when we look at this from that medium-term perspective, this is a significant breakout. Now, it did accelerate, and it had been already trending higher for 4 years when it got to this level previously. It's been rallying now from the lower side of a volatile range for 2 years, and it is certainly overbought in the short term and approaching a previous area of resistance. So it isn't beyond the bounds possibility that we get some pause of consolidation, but the fact that it is breaking out of such a lengthy consolidation would suggest that the 5,000 area is unlikely to offer much more than a brief pause, that there is significant potential for additional upside. I think people will be interested, or at least they'll be thinking about why is it that the Chinese banks are doing so much better right now. Well, there are obviously a number of reasons. One would be that they're benefiting from interest rate hikes, so they're getting better margins on their Hong Kong business. But then you also have a period of synchronized global economic expansion, which for an export powerhouse like China is nothing but good news. But then you also have to think about the rest of the world. And when you think about what investors are worried about, they're worried about valuations. And they're getting increasingly enthused about the tax cuts that are being currently priced into US equities. But then they're also thinking about, where are the bargains? Is there any bargain that's still out there in the world? Well, China Construction Bank, for example, has an estimated PE of 7.47 and yields 3.6%. And it's currently trading at about a book value of 1.07, if my memory serves me correctly. So when you think about it in those terms, then there is the potential here for the Chinese banks to be re-rated. And because there is a simple fact, is that we're in a bull market, and that synchronized global economic expansion papers over a lot of cracks. And all of those problems that people have been worrying about with regard to China and the bad loans, well, those will become an issue at some point, but probably not until the period of synchronized global economic expansion is over. And in between now and then there is the potential for additional upside. And it's a pretty similar story when you look at the mainland banks in China as well. So they are pushing on to new closing highs in here today. And again, if we look at that long-term chart, this move looks reasonably well supported. When you think about it, that banks pulled back very sharply in 2015 following that almost bubbly advance following the rollout of options coinciding with the Hong Kong Shanghai Stock Connect. And it's taken a couple of years to convalesce, but now they're breaking out to new recovery highs. And the Hang Seng cruised through 30,000 in the last couple of weeks, and it is pushing on to the highs, pushing on above the highs that we saw in 2007. It's being, I think, it's been led higher by Tencent, but the banks are now starting to chip in as well in terms of their performance. So when we look at the composition of the index, Tencent is the largest holding, but then you've got banks and financials. And when you think about it in those terms, the banks and the insurance companies make up significant weightings in this particular index. So in a period of synchronized economic expansion, then where you are starting to get interest rate hikes, then the Chinese or the Hong Kong sector looks like a high beta play on the resurgence in interest in banks, both in the US and pretty much globally. Even when we start to look at the European banking indices, well, The Eurostoxx banks index is at a new recovery high for the last couple of years as it completes what was a 9 month period of ranging. And when we look at the UK at FTSE 350 banks index, well, it is also pushing on to new recovery highs. And of course, that's within the context of what is so far an almost decade-long base formation. So 5,000 has been an important Rubicon for the FTSE 350 banks for a significant period, and it really will need to not just test it but sustain a move above it to confirm that we're back in a demand-dominated environment for UK financials. And of course, when we think about what it is that the media is focusing on with regard to Europe and with the UK, well, Germany still doesn't have a government, and the media in the UK is constantly talking about the implications of Brexit. But the reality is that the UK economy is still growing in a rather impressive manner, and the FTSE 100, which is very much an international index, has continued to hold this advance. But even when we look at the AIM 100, which one would I think probably begin to think that the strength of the pound would begin to represent a bit of a headwind for it, that's just not occurring. In fact, the relative stability of the pound is as important for the UK as it is for India. And Modi was in Davos in here today, and he gave his speech in Hindi. So he was as much talking to the people back home as he was to those in Switzerland. And what he is obviously saying is that India is open for business, and the UK government is, I think, trying to make the same point, despite the fact that of this uncertainty around the eventual Brexit negotiations, or the outcome of those negotiations. Now, the pound was clipping 140 against the dollar in here today, and it has rather raced to get up here, so there is the possibility that we get some pause and consolidation around this level. And particularly when we look at it against the euro, it is right in the region of the trend mean, and it is so far holding the majority of its advance, although it was in mildly negative territory in here today. If it can sustain a move above 114, it will be breaking the downtrend. And that downtrend was pretty gripping and lasted for over 2 years. And that would represent, I think, perceptions that the UK is back on the front foot, gaining ground, which has been a particularly unpopular perspective from the media's perspective for really quite a lengthy period already. Now, when we look at the USA, the Nasdaq pushed on again to new high ground in here today. Netflix, which I've regarded as a canary in the coal mine along with Tesla, is now accelerating higher, not least because of earnings and the fact that they were able to, I think, grow their subscribers by an additional 8 million instead of the expected 6 million. So that has seen a re-rating of the share, and it surged higher in early trading right in here this morning. But the broader picture is that if these are canaries in the coal mine and they're still doing well, then the canaries are still singing, so that's all good news. It's when these kinds of high-leveraged companies that I think Netflix is a B-plus company, when they roll over, when they are not performing because they no longer have access to abundant credit that has helped to fuel this growth, well, that's when we would have a more, I think, important lead indicator. So, for example, when we look at the high yield spread index, I think there are two important points that need to be made. One is that it is still inert and not really going anywhere. That's despite the fact that we've had a number of news headlines talking about it going higher. In fact, I was asked about it on Bloomberg TV yesterday, and I didn't have the chart in front of me, which was rather annoying, so I was rather going on memory. And memory is not a particularly reliable indicator. But there are two important points. One is that as long as this is going sideways, it's unlikely to be a source of strife or worry for the global economy. The other is that when this spread started trending higher in 2014, then It acted as a lead indicator for strife in the stock market. If we actually compare the points, is that this index started trending higher in 2014 and stopped trending higher in at the beginning of 2016. And compare that to what happened in the S&P 500, where the spread started to widen after a particularly consistent period of time in the S&P 500 for the previous 2 years. Shortly after that, it had a larger reaction, which was a warning shot across the bows. And then we had the index was able to push onto new high ground, but there was a marked loss of momentum, and then we gave way to some rather acute bouts of volatility. And it was in early 2016 that the high yield spread started to contract again, and stock market consistency was reasserted. Well, now the market is accelerating higher. It is now much more consistent than at any point in the trend since 2009. And as long as that remains the case, we can give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. High yield spreads are not offering any kind of sign that they're an obstacle to additional upside for the stock market. So, this is an accelerating market. This quite simply is a bull market. It is being driven by synchronized global economic expansion, and that papers over a lot of cracks. So, that is the point that I think a lot of people are kind of missing when they are getting particularly worried about when are we going to have the big pullback. The important thing about accelerations is that they tend to go on faster, further, and longer than many people anticipate. And this market is accelerating higher. It is going up much faster than it has done in at least a decade. And what that suggests is that we are approaching an ending. There is no sign yet that the ending is nigh. And I think that is perhaps the most important point. When we look at a share like Amazon, then it's something that people own because it accelerates, and it is now accelerating again. Every time it has accelerated previously, it has pulled back to the trend mean. In fact, it has pulled back below the trend mean, and it has found support in the region of previous peaks. It did that in late 2016, and it did it again in the middle of 2017. Well, the most recent peak beyond this one was around $1,100. So it could pull back by 250 and still be in a consistent trend. And that the fact that that now also coincides with the region of the trend mean would suggest that it is an important Rubicon. And I think that's the important point with accelerations, that they are the time when we make money fastest, and they are the time which is our most exciting, but they're also fearful times because nobody knows how long the good news is going to keep coming. But clear downward dynamics will be required to check these advances. And what that also, I think, feeds through into is people are watching the VIX index. Now, what I think is an important point is that the VIX index has not surged higher. It has pulled back for just about 2 days and was pretty much unchanged in here today and wasn't quite able to hold its advance. But what is perhaps worth looking at is the volatility of the VIX index. And that has also been inert, but it has been ranging at a somewhat higher level for the last 4 months. Part of the reason for that is because volatility is calculated as an average. And in that regard, it is quite similar to how we think of a range as an explosion waiting to happen. Ranges are boring relative to the trending phases. And when you get the breakout, it is surprising because we have been conditioned by the range not to expect this explosive move. And yet that's exactly what happens. And what's happening in the volatility index is because volatility has been so low, then the calculation of the average is low. Eventually, it will break out. And in fact, now, because the average has been so low for so long, the volatility is more sensitive to moves in the stock market than it would have been previously. So a comparatively small move in the stock market, even a reaction of maybe even 5 or 6%, is going to have an outsized move on volatility. Now, when we look at the U.S. Treasury market, then it was not holding its move to new highs on the yield in here today, and we're getting a little bit of a pullback starting to evolve in here. Now, it is somewhat, and I think it is probably appropriate to look at the futures contract. It is oversold in the short term, so there is certainly potential for an unwind of the short-term oversold condition, and the potential for a reversion back to the mean is certainly not beyond the bounds of possibility. That is despite the fact that the medium-term move does look like it is going to break further lower, that the medium-term outlook looks like the yields are going to move higher. But I think the question, and it's a big question, and I still have a long position in Treasury futures, is whether that move lower in prices and up in yields is going to happen now. And I just I'm rather skeptical that it's going to happen immediately. So we are still in a really rather a bullish environment. Personally, I'm rather upset with myself that I got shaken out of my Nikkei future. It was at above 24,000 in here today, and I'm unwilling to chase. I think that with the yen strengthening through the towards this 110 area, and potentially with a little bit further to go, there is the potential that we could get a pause of consolidation. But I think I do have to continue to keep an eye on the second section index, which has not really paused and has continued to push on to new high ground, and it is racing towards this 8,000 level. And considering that it did pause around 6,000 and 7,000, it's I think it's a reasonable assessment that it could pause also around 8,000, which would I think translate as a lead indicator for a pause on the Nikkei. So I am I think probably going to demur from buying it back in the short term. I think that, of course, is subject to events. Well, if we look at the dollar index, then it is back testing this 90-point level, and it does have top formation completion characteristics. It has encountered resistance in the region of the trend mean, and it is now at a new reaction low. Well, if it's got lower lows and lower highs, it's a downtrend, and it is short-term oversold in the right now, so there is potential for a bounce, but it will need to sustain a move above the trend mean to confirm a return to demand dominance. And when we look at the precious metal markets, then I think this is important because gold has pushed on and is now pressuring that $1,350 area again. Ranges are explosions waiting to happen, and gold has been ranging for almost 2 years. So eventually, when it breaks out, it is going to do so in a dynamic manner, and it is likely, I think, to be on the upside, considering that the downtrend has already been broken. And what that suggests is that what happens in the next $10 or $20 or so in terms of the gold price is likely to be rather important. And platinum did not follow through on the downside yesterday and was up almost $16 in here today. And if this is nothing more than some consolidation in the region of the upper side of the range, and it can hold the majority of that impressive advance off the December lows, then the argument for it reasserting medium-term demand dominance, I think, will be bolstered. And platinum has been really quite inert for a significant period, and the fact that it is trading below the price of gold and palladium is not a condition that you see particularly often. And palladium is pausing in following what was a really rather impressive break through 1,000. And as long as that's all it's doing, I think we can continue to give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. But I think platinum does have significant potential to play catch up in here. And I think when we just simply look around the world, what we're pr being presented with is an increasing number of accelerating trends. What that suggests is that Europe does have potential to improve upon its performance. It has broken through that 400-point level now, and there is the potential that it will at least get back up towards the peaks that we saw in 2000 and again in 2007. And when we look at Europe on a pan-Europe basis, Europe stocks index has also through the 400 level, and I think that it is looking increasingly likely that it will be able to sustain the move above it on this occasion. If we're still in a period where growth is picking up, then it should translate into a more enthusiastic environment for just about everywhere. The important point to remember, though, is that the Wall Street leash effect is important, and it is particularly important when the market is doing so very well. And because the US was first out of the trouble from the credit crisis, then it is the leader, and leaders lead in both directions. They lead for a reason. So, monitoring what happens in terms of those big Wall Street companies is, I think, likely to have knock-on effects for just about everything else. And I think with that, I will leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.